All right, I'm here with Everito, and we are at Casa Everito, kind of our home away from home. Actually, your home. We're in the Garaje Henderson. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. We're sitting here with some typewriters doing our, cleaning and polishing and actually using them. So.
Well, it's been a long time since you and I have actually sat down to record something in terms of a typewriter, and today we've got a special, it's a special guest, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. We're going to be listening to a recording done. I'm in it a little bit. I should have been in it a little bit more, but being untechnical in the way that I am, I had to get rubbed out. Sorry, Bob. But we're going to be listening to a podcast that was put together by Bob Marshall, and he's having a chat with Joe Van Cleve.
He has, if you are anywhere in the typosphere and have Googled any one of your machines, you probably have seen Joe introducing the machine and showing you all of its features.
And I tell you what, I thought, oh my God, we have 26 podcasts or so. And I looked to see how many of his videos, because it's a lot of work to do podcasts. But then when you're doing a video and you're talking about editing and all that, that's that 10 times more work. He has over, to date, 240 videos of various, you name the topic, he's covered it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was looking at some information on one of the Skywriters, Corona Skywriter, and I think one of the first videos that popped up was his, and I watched, he gave a kind of a turntable tutorial showing you all of the features of the machine. So he's a good resource for machines. If you're interested in some of their features, you can go on there, and he will give you a tour of the machine you're about to purchase.
He is practically, you could almost call him the YouTube encyclopedia of typewriters.
Absolutely. Yeah, he most definitely. I know I haven't watched all of his, but I've seen quite a few of them.
Well, the great thing, and you and I talked about this offline, he is a very detailed person. Like some of his videos, I mean, if you're going to watch one, grab your popcorn, get your notebook out, because he is very detailed. And he talks a little bit about that with Bob and I, about why and how he's a detailed person based on what he does for a living. But it also came in handy. You might want to, the great thing about YouTube is, there may be some information that he's talking about that you can fast forward on YouTube. But boy, if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts, realistically, of what you're working on, particularly if you have a model typewriter he's talking about, this is the guy to listen to.
Absolutely, for sure.
Well, you ready to listen? Let's jump right on in. And here's Bob Marshall along with myself a little bit and Mr. Joe Van Cleve. Welcome to the Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to listen to our little gab fest. We're just a group of folks who enjoy the heck out of typewriters and welcome you to our table. Sit back and enjoy the show, and away we go.
Just because you all were not bored enough from the West Coast, Austin Typewriter Inc., some guy named Bob Marshall. And that's me. Just an author, a writer, and a bit of a fan of these things we like to call typewriters. I hope you all are sitting down, because you are in for a bit of a treat. On the line tonight, great host of Austin Typewriter Inc., the man who put it all together, is Mr. David Gimmeit. And with him, our famed guest. Get ready. Sit down if you're not sitting down. Mr. Joe Van Cleve. So these are really good things. Hope you're all excited. If you have not seen Joe's work, if you have not seen what he does and how he does it, you are about to be impressed. He's got the YouTube channel that taught me almost everything I know about typewriters. So personally, I'm terribly delighted. Joe, how the heck are you, sir?
I am doing fine this evening. How about yourself, Bob?
Oh, good. Not bad for a Monday night. And I hear David in the background too, Mr. Gimmeit.
I'm absolutely here, and I want to say that I am really excited to have Austin Typewriter Inc. along with Bob Marshall and Mr. Joe Van Cleve. And this is a treat for me, because this gentleman has got I'm going to let him tell the story about all those videos, but he has got an amazing trove of information online. And if you haven't seen it, you absolutely have to go check it out. So, Bob, I'm going to let you run the show tonight. I'm just going to kind of kick back and listen a little bit and learn more about the wonderful world of typewriters.
Amen. Amen. Joe, let's get your pedigree. There's 200 plus YouTube videos, I suspect, at this point, right?
Yeah, 240.
Wow.
I think. Yeah, 240.
Well, I suspect, it had to start somewhere. Let's get to the root of why you started in YouTube videos and educating the rest of us.
Well, my YouTube career kind of started a few years before the typewriter things did, when I just decided that I was into pinhole photography and building homemade cameras for years, and I decided it was time to kind of put a couple videos out about that. That's how I started in YouTube. It's a longer story. It goes back to the late 1970s is how I got into video technology to begin with. We might talk about that later. But then a few years later, I started to – when I was really starting to get into typewriters more, I decided, you know what? I don't know everything there is to know about typewriters, but I know enough to talk about them on camera. And one day I took – my blue Webster XL747 and maybe Olivetti Lera 22, I think. I took them out to a city park, set him on a bench, and set up a camera and started talking. And that's kind of where the whole typewriter video series started. And it was intended to be aimed at least that video was aimed at a rank beginner, like somebody that didn't know anything about typewriters. If you saw one of these, what do they do? How do they work? What can you do with them? That was kind of my focus.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's why so many people latch onto it and really enjoy the content that you put out. When did you start writing?
Well, I've dabbled in writing. I've never been a published writer per se, other than I did have a story, Cold Hard Type series of books, I think the first book. But I haven't really been a professional writer per se, just a dabbler in short stories. And I've worked for years in writing in a journal and blogging and things like that, playing around with fictional ideas and vignettes and things like that. So that kind of writing, you might call it the analogy is ideally – everybody should be creative, although not everybody is necessarily paid to be creative. So the analogy is everybody can pick up a brush or a pencil and dabble in art, but it doesn't mean you're Pablo Picasso, right? In the same way, I think everybody can put words on paper, and it doesn't necessarily mean you'll be a professional. You won't be the next Stephen King necessarily, but we all should be creative. That's just part of being human, I think, right, is that creative streak. And that's kind of my interest in it, is I've always had that kind of creativity, just to be able to sit down and put words on paper and do whatever I want to with it. And that's kind of where I see the typewriter is enabling people to do that. The more the typewriter movement grows, the more beginners you have. The people that start out as a beginner and they learn and grow in the hobby, they become more mature, but there's always more beginners coming up, right? So those people we can't forget about. We have to remember that people have to start from somewhere in their learning journey. I took typing class in 1972 or 73. And it was a big room full of mostly girls, a few of us guys, and IBM selectors and some kind of other type bar electric machines we had. And that's where I started typing. But yes, we don't have they don't teach keyboarding, I guess, as I don't know. I guess they don't do that in a lot of schools. So.
Well, it sounds like a win-win. That would be the class I would want to be in. I know that's why I took typewriting my senior year of high school.
You know, it was an elective. I was thinking about that this evening, actually, before the show started. Typing was an elective, and electives were one of those kind of classes that if you were kind of lazy and just trying to get through school, you wanted to take the electives, right? They weren't as hard typically, but typing was actually rather challenging, right? If you want to, you have to make 35 words per minute, I think, is what you had to do to graduate. Mm-hmm. So from the class, get credit. So you had to work at it.
For all those listeners, I am such a huge fan of these two gentlemen I have on the line. I can't tell you personally what they mean to me. I set out and started writing 5-6 years ago, whether it be journaling, and then journaling turned into my writing a whole book, American Roadrunner, on how to race choppers cross country and solve all the world's problems at the same time. But I had to go to the typewriter and realize how much the typewriter does for me personally in my process of writing as a rough draft machine. And I write all my rough drafts on typewriters. It just works easier for me. Then I personally transpose. So I know when I started those handful of years ago, naturally, I went to YouTube. That's what we do today. And there was Joe. And Joe was kind and not showing off, just saying, this is how this works, and this is how you can work this, and this is... And Joe, I've just learned so much from you, and I know I mentioned it the other day, the other Sunday, when we were in the Typers Club Live that we like to do on our Sunday mornings, that Greg, the poor typist, is kind enough to host for us on YouTube Live. If anyone's listening, feel free to check that out. I'm in the Pacific here. I don't always make it by 8 a.m., but I know Joe's always there on time, so...
Yeah, usually.
It's such a pleasure and an honor. When I first started watching your videos, I was absolutely sold that you were a teacher or an educator of some type, because you were so good at talking to the camera and going through what you're talking about. But you're not. Come to find out, you're in a field similar to mine.
Yeah, I'm in a high-tech field. And yeah, I'm not a trained educator, but I guess it's something that maybe it's one of those things where you find your public speaking voice, your public personality somehow.
Yeah.
And I think maybe doing videos is a good way to do that. You can just talk to the camera, edit the thing afterwards, and see how you did. And I'll give you an example. I'm sitting in front of my computer monitor, and I have a sticky note that's taped to my monitor, and it says, no hems, no haws, no ums, no ahs. And that's just referring to when we talk, we often go and this and that, and I purposely edit those out as much as I can when I'm doing my edit.
That's
but
great.
I learned that, you know, it makes my editing process easier if I learn not to say those, right? So yeah, it's kind of, you train yourself to have a more of a public speaking voice, and just imagine there's somebody in front of you that you're explaining something to, and that helps.
Yeah, well, I give you a lot of credit, because it makes watching it so much easier, and it is exciting that it goes beyond typewriters. You're the one who taught me what an Alpha Smart is, you know, a keyboard that's electronic that,
yes.
You know, run us through that for people listening.
Okay, so a company named Renaissance Learning, back in the late 90s, sometime maybe mid-90s, they came out with some keyboarding products that were designed originally for the educational market. And these are like, they look like a standard PC keyboard, a little bit deeper from front to back, and they have a little thin LCD display, liquid crystal display, that can show 4 to 6 lines of text. And it's a built-in text editor built into a keyboard, and it's powered by 3 AA batteries that last 200 or 300 hours of use, which is amounts to maybe 9 months to a year of normal use. The files can be transferred via a USB cable to your computer if you have the Alpha Smart, the Renaissance Learning is no longer being supported, because Renaissance Learning is no longer making that product. But
sure,
you can also use this feature called the send feature. And all that means is you hook up the cable to your computer, you open up a window that has either a text editor, word processor, even a text box on a website screen, and you click send on the keyboard on the Alpha Smart, and it'll type the file one letter at a time very rapidly into your document. So that's the alternative way to transfer files if you don't have the Renaissance Learning software that's designed to transfer it wholesale. It kind of is like that file transfer thing is like, if you remember Palm Pilots, remember back in the 90s,
sure.
Palm Pilots, right?
Sure.
They had a special software that you had to use on your computer to transfer files, because a Palm Pilot didn't look like a normal flash drive to a computer.
Right.
That's kind of the way the Alpha Smart Neo is. It needed that special software.
Well, I mention it because I know I put out to people who ride motorcycles and travel on motorcycles, what do you all use? And most people, of course, said they use laptops. I'm one of the few people who travel with a typewriter. However, the other few comments I got was people who travel with these Alpha Smarts. So I think it's great. I can tell you that I have a smaller 10-inch laptop that's Windows 7. and it doesn't do the internet at all. It just plugs into my Google Drive, and it kind of works like an Alpha Smart these days. So,
yes, I have an old netbook. Remember netbooks?
Right, right.
2000s? It's running. I think mine's like an MSI Wind. It was a Taiwanese brand, but it's running an old version of XP. Its modem doesn't even work anymore, so I can't even connect to the internet. But I can use it for transferring files to and from it, you know, and just doing – it has – you know, you can use it as a text editor, right?
Right.
Transfer stuff to a thumb drive with it. But, yeah. But I like the AlphaSmart. They are kind of typewriter-like in the sense that you have limited editing capability.
Sure.
Really, the problem is the screen is really narrow, top to bottom, up and down, a small little mail slot, kind of a window of your document, you know. So to picture the entire document in front of you for editing. But you can do some edits, very much like the way a typewriter is.
I think I need to preface everything you're saying. I figured out last weekend that Joe has perfect eyesight. So unlike the rest of us who need very large font and glasses to see what we're typing, Joe can see it just fine. I think that's why the Alpha Smart works just fine for you. I'm quite jealous. That's the answer. So, oh, that's funny.
Well, it's not really perfect. It's a little fuzzy in the distance, but somehow when my eyes have been aging, it's getting better, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, let's chat about your favorite typewriter machine you have these days. You were kind enough to bring a few out the other day.
We'll go back to 1961 or two. I was born in 57, so this is like 3 or 4 years old. My mom dies when I'm 5 years old. I don't have too many memories of her. One of my memories is I'm sitting in her lap. And she's seated at the kitchen table in front of a typewriter, and she's typing a letter, I think, to her mom, my grandma. And I remember watching the letters on the page get printed, and then she stopped. And, of course, I was too young to read, but I somehow was able to memorize the keys, and I hit a number of keys and made part of a sentence that was legible, apparently, because I remember her praising me for doing that, right? Well, the interesting thing is I don't remember what kind of typewriter it was, and I've talked to my brothers since then and in the last few years, and they don't remember there being a typewriter, but I'm sure there was. I just don't know what it was. So that's my earliest typewriter memory. And if you go up to the early 70s, of course, in high school, that's when I took typing and learned electric typewriters, you know, learned how to touch type. Dad bought us a Hermes 10, which is a electric version of the Hermes 3000, essentially. That's what it is. And he bought it from my oldest brother. I used it a little bit in school writing essays and papers. And we still have that typewriter, actually. And it's actually on loan right now to a friend of mine in town. But I want to get it back so I can put it on the channel and show it. So I used that typewriter. And then I went in the Navy in the mid to late 70s, and there was a time in the late 70s I started writing poetry, and I wanted to type my poetry up. And I was working a temporary assignment, and my senior chief in his office had a bright red IBM Selectric 2. And he said, after hours, you can use this typewriter. So I was typing up all my poetry on an IBM Selectric with whatever type ball he had in there at the time. And then when I got out of the Navy, I still had a bunch of poetry that I wanted to type up, and I wanted that kind of a quality imprint, you know, from a carbon film ribbon. So I went and bought a cheap Smith Corona Daisy Wheel. I think it was an SE-100, if I remember right, kind of a dark gray-looking wedge-shaped Daisy Wheel with, you know, the H-series ribbons and all that, right? There was a place called Service Merchandise, and you could buy stuff like that on discount. Anyway, so I used that typewriter in the 80s up until the mid-90s. It wasn't really until the very early 2000s that somehow I got interested in the idea of a manual typewriter, and I went to the local typewriter shop and bought an Adler, a medium-sized Adler from John Lewis, who's still around here. And from there, I got the Royal Mercury. It was really my first ultra-portable. And that's probably in the mid-2000s. And that's kind of when I really started getting interested in typewriters as a thing, other than just an appliance, you know, for writing with. That was about the same time I discovered the typewriter blogs, right? Richard Polch and Strike Through, right? Cheryl Lowry and all the other early bloggers. I started a blog in 2006 that's still going, and I didn't really start it out doing typecasting immediately, but maybe around 2007 is when I started typecasting. And I think it was the summer of 2008. It was a really creative time in the typosphere, because we started doing things like typecasting on aluminum foil. You roll a sheet of aluminum foil into your typewriter, and it embosses the letters into the foil. And then somebody figured out how to make homemade carbon paper by using really heavy crayon coloring on a sheet of paper, like multiple colors.
Wow.
And then you could use that as carbon paper and transfer this colored imprint to another sheet of paper in your typewriter. Things like that we were doing really creatively that summer. And that's kind of where the whole typewriter thing started for me, is around 2007, 2008. In my other life, I work in the semiconductor manufacturing industry. I work in a fab, a giant factory where you make integrated circuits on silicon wafers, right? So I work in a high-tech environment. I'm surrounded with computers all day. I wear a clean room suit under yellow lights, and you're surrounded by technology. At the time that I was doing this, in maybe the early 2000s, my company issued us, this is before the era of the smartphone, they issued us some hand-spring visor. Was a Palm OS-based PDA, right? And they issued us to be able to take notes digitally in the factory. And I started writing, you know, journals and blog articles on my PDA at work. And
that's
I
great.
Also found this alternative keyboard called Fitaly, F-I-T-A-L-Y, which arranges the letters in a square for single stylus entry for the stylus, you know, and it was real. I could do like 35 words a minute on with Hunt and Pecking with a stylus on that keyboard. Anyways, so I started doing this writing at work in my breaks and spare time in this high tech world. And the counterpoint to that, coming out of that, because I was working long work days in a compressed work week. So you work like 3 or 4 days in a row of 12-hour days, and then you have 3 or 4 days off. So in my off days to decompress, right, it was getting away from the high tech, from the computers, and I discovered something about the physical, tactile nature of the typewriter was very kind of transformative in some ways. I think there was almost – I call it typewriter therapy, and there are some weeks at work when I can't wait to get home on the weekend and type just for the feel of the finger keys. And I've said this, you know, probably multiple times recently on my videos, but I think typewriters, manual typewriters, are like cybernetic. Like they're an extension of your biology. Like your hands, your fingers, your ligaments and tendons are the biological part of it. And then when your fingers hit the keys, you have these metal guides and type bars and wires that operate the type slug to the paper. And that is like the cybernetic part, the mechanical part. And you can feel the feedback from the typewriter in your fingers. You can tell the difference between a, you know, an Olympia and a Hermes or whatever, right? Or a Brother. You can tell that difference in the way it feels. It's the feedback you're getting. So I look upon it like it's cybernetic. It's part man and part machine. And that's what's so interesting about it to me.
I really do relate it to playing musical instruments. My degree is in music. So, man, when I pick up a guitar, the guitar is just the instrument that transfers the music I make into sound, as I believe, yeah, a typewriter transfers the letters onto the page, which makes words, which make writings, et cetera, et cetera. I completely agree, and I love that tactile feel. I love knowing that.
I think it's the ability to focus on the writing, the work itself, that makes typewriters so much better than computers even. You know, the typical computer keyboard is too easy to hit the keys. It's too easy to miss hit a key on a computer keyboard, right?
Sure.
I mean, even I have a mechanical keyboard in front of me right now, and even that is the keys are a little too easy to hit. So it's easy to miss hit on a computer, and then you have to think about the cursor and what the software is trying to do. If it's a full-blown word processor like Word or something, you know, it's constantly trying to, unless you have it disabled, it's trying to tell you how to spell things and how to pronounce, you know, the sentence structure. Whereas a typewriter, it's physical ink imprinted onto and into the paper, and you feel every keystroke. You feel it in the tip of your finger. You feel it in your hands. You get that feedback, and you see the word and letter appear in front of you, and you hear something, right, with your ears. You have this multi-sensory experience.
No, I agree. Unless you're David using a noiseless all the time, you can really feel it. So,
yes, the thrust action of the noiseless.
Yeah, David has a noiseless problem.
You know, I had this interesting experience with my Silent Super that I bought from Craigslist, a local ad. And I've described this story before, but it was what I call a hippie. It was a guy in sort of the university part of town in a rental house, and the house was filthy. The yard was kind of unkempt, and there was kind of makeshift sculptures in the yard. A very colorful person. And the kitchen was sort of covered in grease, and there was something unrecognizable smoldering in a skillet.
Wow.
It was just one of those colorful experiences. But there was this typewriter, Silent Super, a little bit rough shape, a little dirty, and I got it for a good price. And it stunk, and it skipped, and it was, you know, clogged up with grease and grime. And it took me, you know, it took me only about a week or so to get it basically clean, but it still skipped, and it still didn't smell very good. So I worked on it for over a period of several months on and off, and finally trying to tackle the last of the skipping issues, and I had to also like realign some of the type bars, right, get the type alignment better.
Sure.
A 12 character per inch machine. And so what I did late at night is I took a roll of paper. You know, I've been doing this kind of teletype paper kind of stuff, like, you know, Jack Kerouac. I put a roll of paper in it and set it to single line spacing and just started typing stream of consciousness off the top of my head. And the whole purpose for doing this was really just to troubleshoot the machine to see after what letter is it skipping, you know, to kind of troubleshoot the behavior of the skipping. And the beauty of this exercise was that it wasn't a writing exercise. It's not like you're sitting down with the intention of writing a letter. You kind of have expectations of what that means and what you have to say and how you have to word things, and depending on who your audience is, right? Or if you're writing a blog article or something, right? But if you're just writing random nonsense for yourself, it kind of frees up your mind. You have no inhibitions. You can write anything. You can be as silly as you possibly want. You can be, you know, filthy. I mean, you can write anything, literally, right?
Right.
But it's a great exercise in freeing up the creative writing. And I discovered that stream of consciousness. Even today, in fact, I was sitting typing on my Calibri, just talking about what happened today and the things and the events. And it's just a great way of freeing up your mind. But I really enjoyed that experience as kind of where I discovered that I really like smaller size typefaces because the stream of consciousness writing experience, you don't want to stop to hit the carriage return as much, and you don't want to stop to change paper, so which is why using a roll of paper is fun because you can measure your progress in feet.
Right.
hanging off the back of the typewriter on the floor, right?
And I get my rolled paper as fax paper from Staples. Where do you get your rolled paper? I think it's half an inch shorter than usual paper.
Yeah, so I buy the thermal fax paper for the thermal machines, but for the regular typewriters, so Staples has an aisle that has like craft materials for schools and kids, and they sell a roll of white craft paper that is 17 inches wide, And if you divide that in half, that's 8.5 inches. So I'll, and it's wrapped in plastic, clear plastic. So I'll take that roll home and I'll cut it in half on my miter saw.
Ah, the miter saw.
It leaves some paper dust, but it makes a nice clean cut. And then you have two halves that are still wrapped in plastic.
Sure.
And then you can make a makeshift. I think I made one recently, a makeshift paper holder out of some black foam core and a little metal rod that runs through it to hold it. And I got one of those tear strips off of a aluminum foil carton.
Right.
In fact, you could probably use an empty aluminum foil carton to hold the paper in.
Yeah.
It has that tear strip already there, right? So.
Yeah, and I've got a friend who uses an old paper towel dispenser, you know, the kind you'd hang in the kitchen, and he hangs it on the wall. Personally, I use rope. My typewriter for that is in front of a window, and I've got rope hanging from the drape hanger, right? So,
hey, I don't use the roll of paper all the time, but I've been doing half-size sheets of paper. Well, they work good for blogs. For typecasting, because you don't want a super long line, because when you shrink it down to the size of a computer screen, the letters are too small. So I've always blogged on half-width sheets of paper. And then recently for this one-type-page blog that Daniel Moreau has been doing, you can email him your pages and he'll put them on his blog. I use that also for that purpose.
Oh, okay. So you're taking...
And I had recently been actually using some of this Southworth letter quality paper that you get at the office supply stores. There's several different varieties. There's a, you know, kind of a marbled looking paper, and there's kind of a, you know, different kinds. It's a little bit nicer. I find sometimes the typewriters that have hard platens and you normally would have to use a backing sheet of paper with, if you just use the thicker letter quality paper, it kind of acts like its own backing sheet.
It's like a 25 or 30 pound paper.
Yeah, 24. It comes in 24 and 32. I find the 32 is a little too stiff for some of my machines, like the small ultra portables.
Sure.
They have the skinny platens and the springs on the paper bit or the pressure rollers aren't as strong usually.
Right.
So it sometimes has problems, you know. But the 24 pound paper is really good for most machines. I was going through a phase, I was using thin paper. You know, I still have some of that too.
I'm curious about something. You mentioned that back when you were in the Naval Service, that you used to use that red Selectric to write poetry. Do you still have some of those writings today?
Oh yeah, I do. I have all the original typings, and then I think I retyped it at one point in the 80s, and then submitted it to be copyrighted by the Library of Congress or something like that. And I never published it or anything, but it's a lot of just poor poetry. But there's a few pieces in there that I like. But, yeah, I do have all that old poetry. And I was thinking, actually, one of these days I'm going to go through it and start putting some of that on my blog, perhaps. If you go to jovancleve.com, it links over to my blog. And it's on Blogger, so I've been on Blogger for a long time. It's one of those, you know, everybody has their own. It's like Ford or Chevy, you know, Mac or PC, Blogger or what is it, or WordPress, whatever. Anyway, so everybody has their own preference. My only preference for it is because I've been on it. It's just I hate to change, right? But so my blog is a combination of typecasting and talking about photography and anything else that interests me. I've done local stories about things in Albuquerque, things about my growing up. It's just a hodgepodge of different subject matter. But lately, it's been a lot about either photography or typewriters, one or the other.
Well, tell us, this is where I tell a joke, maybe an inside joke, and we'll let the listeners figure it out. Please tell us more about your vlog now.
My vlog. Well, so I used to hang out at this coffee shop that unfortunately is no longer around, but it's down by the university part of town. It was Winning Coffee, and it was kind of an eclectic place where a lot of writers would come down there to write, and they had a sidewalk cafe culture where people would hang out on the sidewalk and smoke cigarettes and drink coffee and talk. And
oh, my kind of place, right.
Kind of a beatnik kind of a place, right? One of the few places in Albuquerque that had that that atmosphere. But I would go down there and just write a blog article, either by hand in a journal book, and usually I preferred the composition books, actually, you know, rather than a fancier journal book. Sometimes I would write a blog article on the Alpha Smart. Occasionally I would write on a typewriter, but usually I would handwrite them. And then when I get home, I would transcribe them. Sometimes I would type them up, and the typing up would be like the editing process, right? I would typically write in mechanical pencil and then red line edit and red ink on the journal book, and then type it into the typewriter onto paper, and then scan that and put it on the blog along with photographs. And I always use Flickr as my repository for getting images between my computer or my phone and the blog.
Oh, okay.
I put it on Flickr first, and then I would take the link from Flickr and put it in my blogger template. So,
yeah, that's really cool. And then you got into YouTube, and
yep.
Maybe it'd be really exciting. I'm just going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say you are the most successful YouTuber I know, because you might make enough few dollars on your side to support your typewriter habit.
Yeah, it probably supports, you know, typewriters and maybe buying cameras or microphones every once in a while. You know,
right.
It's a hobby that's self-supporting. The thing about YouTube, right, is what's interesting about it is it's one of those stories that I didn't realize was a story until I looked back on it. And what I mean by that is in 1978, I was in the Navy and I had an opportunity to go to a sea school. A sea school was a more advanced training, a specialty field in your job rating. And this particular sea school was on closed circuit video. And I remember the day that they shipped me off to school, we were out at sea about 80 miles off the coast of California. And I woke up that morning on the ship, and I went to bed that night in North Chicago in Great Lakes, Illinois. Right. So I took a helicopter to a taxi to an airplane and another taxi across the country. But I went to that school. I learned all about closed circuit video and the basics of video cameras and video recording and all that. I spent the rest of my naval service in that technology. And then when I got out of the Navy in 81, I worked for about 12 years as a service technician, servicing electronics, including video equipment.
Cool.
And in that time period, I got a camcorder and started dabbling in video. And let's say maybe in the late 80s and up to the 90s and early 2000s, I was messing around with the kind of experimental videos, you know, just kind of things that really weren't narrative kind of stories, but just short experimental videos. All of that ends up being preparatory to YouTube.
Okay.
I didn't really go into YouTube consciously thinking that I had this background in video. That's not it at all. It's just I backed into YouTube because I wanted a place to share my ideas for the camera making projects and things like that. And it's only after I started doing YouTube more often that I realized, oh, you know what? You're actually, this is like the culmination of years of working in this technology. I mean, what would take us a lot of effort to edit a video, we can do now in a few minutes.
Right, right.
You know, because I remember having to edit analog tape to analog video from like high 8 to VHS, super VHS.
Right, and then you had two VHS plugs together, and yeah, I remember doing a bit of that, sure.
And the problem was always the audio, because you can't dub hi-fi sound after the video has been recorded on VHS. You can only dub the linear audio, which is really cruddy. So, yeah, that was the challenge.
And that really is a cool benefit of your videos. You're very good at explaining to the umpth degree everything of whatever you have laid out in front of you.
It's interesting, you know, that is one of my weaknesses and one of my strengths, right? Every strength can be a weakness or a strength, every attribute of your personality. Hey, I am detail-oriented. It's one of those things that has ended up helping me in my job at work, because I'm better at documenting things like that than a lot of other people, right? A lot of people aren't nitpicking down to the nth degree. And it also helps me, therefore, when I'm doing these videos. And by the way, I don't really script my videos. I sort of think about them the day before. Sometimes I lay in bed at night the night before and think about what I want to do. But I basically just kind of, you know, do it as I go, and then I leave the studio set up as I'm editing, and sometimes I realize, oh, I need another clip, and I go back and just run it, shoot it real quick, and pop the memory card back in the computer and put the new clip in the project. But yeah, the detail-oriented part of it is really important, I think, for the beginner. They need everything shown, right? And I know there's a problem. Some people don't like that. I can understand that. Some people think that I explain things too slow. Or it takes me too long. 15 minutes and all you covered was this. You know, I've had some interesting critical comments. But it's, now you were mentioning earlier about the using modern technology to talk about old technology. And this reminds me of one of the founders of the Whole Earth Catalog, whose name currently escapes me. He came up with this idea of what he calls the technium. And what he means by that is the entire sphere of human technology. And because sometimes we think in popular culture, we think that technology is a narrow window that's moving, and the stuff that's obsolete is no longer in the window, and the things that are yet to come, you can't see yet. But his view is it's an ever-expanding circle. And so an example is there are specialty catalogs and websites where today in 2020 – you can still order a buggy whip. Okay, so like the old technology is still part of technology. It's not gone yet. There is the economic factor of, you know, that it's not economical to make typewriters very well right now, but still that technology is still part of human technology. So that's the thing that's interesting, right? Because the popular conception is technology is really only what's happening right now.
And Joe,
that's not true. There's a whole world of technology that's,
hey,
you know,
Joe,
that's happened.
Joe, what's a buggy whip?
A buggy whip.
A buggy whip. What is that?
You know, if you have a horse-drawn buggy and you have to motivate the horse.
Oh, sure.
It's a reference to the old saying that you can no longer buy buggy whips. You know, they're obsolete, right?
Right.
And my point is, even buggy whips are still being made.
Yeah, it's extremely true, and it's extremely scary how younger people, and maybe not so much anymore, I know in my generation, I was very scared to watch how people would instantly attach on to the newest thing and view that as better. And I don't see it as better. I don't see the modern computer assisting me in writing, for example. I see a typewriter very much assisting me in writing. I ride older motorcycles, 30, 40 years old sometimes, because the new ones are no better. And even when I do get them, I take all the new stuff off. I don't want it. I don't need it. I don't need a speedometer. I don't need whatever.
The flow of technology is like, it's not better necessarily. It's different, right?
Right.
There are some things that I'm really glad we have. But there are other things that where I like the build quality of, you know, of the old technology, especially, right? Because a lot of times in the classic era of the typewriters, they weren't manufacturing to the lowest common denominator, right?
Right.
It wasn't as much as it is now.
Well, they had a lot of competition. There were millions and millions and millions of machines being sold every year. So they really had to compete. They had to make a good product to compete with the competitors.
That's right. Yes. Yes. You know, I was enjoying one of the recent episodes of Austin Typewriter Inc., and you were talking about the Groma Calibri versus the Skywriter. And I really enjoyed that conversation. I do appreciate the build quality of the Calibri, surprisingly, right? And that's just another example of a different economy than a Western capitalist economy was somehow able to make this machine so good. You know,
it's like the American-made typewriters are like the Ford F-150s of the machine, and I prefer very similar. Go figure. It's right. Weird.
Some of it is your experience with an individual sample of the machine, right? Like, for instance, I had one Skywriter, and it incessantly skipped, and I tore it down to the chassis and never working where it wouldn't skip, whereas I had a few skips on the Calibri, and I know what caused it, and I've kind of pretty much cured it. But your experience with a particular machine sometimes, and I mean, some people have a dozen of the same model, but if you've only tried one or two of one model, maybe you just had a bad sample, right? But also,
that's so true.
The point is that everybody has their own preference, and that's a great thing too. I was sampling several different German typewriters in my collection. I have a Triumph Norm 6, I have a Voss, and both of those actually come in the same style case, almost like the same identical case, really. And then I have the SM3 Olympia. And I was just playing around with all of them, just comparing them, different histories in each machine, different. But interestingly, the Triumph was a little quieter. Even though both of those machines have hard platens, I thought the Triumph was a little bit quieter of a machine, which is interesting. And I like the feel of all three of those. Of course, the Olympia, SM3, is nice.
And everyone does it with their own equipment. A guitar player like myself will get different themes from different guitars. And I think as a writer, I'll get different themes from different machines. And we know one of the great Western writers or American Western writers, Larry McMurtry, he wrote on Hermes 3000s, go figure. Yep. So.
Go figure. I've had, speaking of brands of typewriter, I've had three Lettera 22s in my history. I don't have any Lettera 22s right now. One of them I gave away to a friend, and the other two I ended up selling at different times. For me, it was at the time in my experience where I wasn't well-versed in tearing down typewriters as far as I would be more comfortable now doing, but they all three of them had skipping issues. And as you well know with the Lettera, the problem is the tabulator system obscures your direct access to the escapement. Right. It's difficult even to see the escapement, much less reach it. And sometimes all you can do is spray stuff down in there and hope you get it,
Yeah.
That was the real reason why I don't have any Lettera 22s, although if I had bought one that was professionally serviced, I'm sure I'd be happy with it. I do have that Studio 45 and that turquoise blue one, and that's a nice machine, but it is obviously very much an Olivetti in the feel of it. It's interesting how, even when they brought out Underwood, they still maintained that Olivetti feel.
Right.
Because I had an Olivetti Underwood 21 at one point, and that was another interesting typewriter. Got it from a thrift store for like $20. The lady at the thrift store said, the guy that brought it in here told her that he rode a motorcycle across country in the 1960s to New Mexico to be a writer, and he traded his motorcycle for the typewriter.
Wow. And that's a great.
And when I got the typewriter home and got it out of the case, I noticed in the case there was the instruction manual, like the Underwood manual. There was the receipt, right? A yellowed receipt stapled to the instructions, and it was February 29th, 1968. That would have been leap year day, right?
Right.
Yeah. February 29th. And it was an exchange between a car dealership and a Nichols typewriter on Lomas Boulevard here in Albuquerque. So that's pretty much, that explains the story right there.
It's
provenance, right? But I never learned who the writer was. I don't know if he was famous or not.
Yeah, well, if he was willing to trade his motorcycle for it, I don't think he's a very nice person. I mean, pen and paper work. No, I'm just kidding. That is funny to think how much we used to pay. I don't know, a typewriter would be, $1,200 in today's money.
Yeah. Well, I thought at one point, maybe this is, I was trying to think of famous writers in New Mexico. Maybe it was Tony Hillerman, He taught at UNM for years, but I looked in his biography. He got here in the 1960s, early 60s, so it wasn't him.
Yeah, it is exciting. I've done that a few times where something comes with a typewriter, a receipt or something, and I'm able to Google it and look up a long-lost cousin of who used to own this, and they can give me a little information on it, which I put in that binder I was showing off the other day, that binder where I write all the information about the typewriter that I know, and every typewriter has its own page and its own number.
That's right.
Yeah, it's really great to know that these machines really have a crap ton of history that we just could not believe to imagine at all.
Oh, I know. And we might not even want to know the story.
Talking about history, Joe, with all that you've seen, with all the episodes you've done and the history you've had, instead of history, where do you see the typewriter going in the next 5, 10, 20 years, just from your perspective?
That's a great question. So I guess two things, right, is the typewriter community, where it's going. But as far as the typewriter technology, someone, I hope, is going to take modern manufacturing methods and remanufacture a quality typewriter. And I've had discussions about this in Facebook groups and whatnot, but, you know, I think maybe you would need to look at a different design, like a Hammond instead of a Type R machine, for a machine that could be manufactured with quality with fewer mechanical parts. If you think of the way a Hammond is built, it just has less parts. And, so, you know, the problem is always metallurgy, right? The quality of the metals used.
Yep.
Because the We Are Memory Keepers typewriter is based on some quality Japanese design, right?
Right.
Maybe a Brother or Silver Seiko or something. It's based on that, but it's executed with such poor materials, not hard, the hardness of the materials, the ductility, and it's the parts aren't precisely aligned when they're manufactured and assembled. So that's part of it. I guess you could say that if some manufacturer in Asia wanted to create a $1,000 typewriter, they could probably make it out of better parts and align it properly with the factory. But I'd also like to think maybe somebody could figure out how to do it domestically with more advanced manufacturing. So, I mean, that's one possibility for the manual typewriter. I think you could also – I see the hobbyist and DIY, the maker movement. I think you could make a daisy wheel typewriter with an Arduino controller.
Oh, sure.
And you could take a inkjet printer cartridge mechanism that drives the printer head back and forth and maybe figure out how to do an inkjet printer typewriter, right? I mean, you know, that could maybe happen on the hobbyist basis, right, the hobby level. I think an inkjet typewriter would be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'll tell you, do you see more writers using typewriters, getting away from computer? I mean, you have a writing group, I think you're a member of there in Albuquerque.
Yeah, we have a typewriting group. We don't have any professional writers in our group right now. I think it varies. I really do think most writers do use a laptop computer of some kind. But I know some of them, it really depends on what kind of writing they're doing, to be honest with you. But I think the early first draft stages of writing can be enhanced by certain strategies involving lack of distraction, right? Trying to get away from
Amen.
The negative side of what computers can be. Because you go back to like the early 80s, right, when writers were starting to use computers, they weren't internet connected to speak of.
Right.
It was really pre-internet, pretty much. So they were just giant word processors with giant CRT screens and a big box with circuit boards in them. So they were really not that much different from a typewriter. But really, it's the modern evolution of the computer as to what it is now. The universal device that can do anything and everything.
Yeah.
And is optimized to continuously bother you with notifications.
Yep.
Unless you turn them off and go to airplane mode and all that. So it, part of it, I think, depends on your discipline as a writer also. You know, I think a professional writer, some notable person like Stephen King probably, has disciplined himself through years as a writer since he was a kid, right? That he probably has that discipline built in where the computer isn't going to be a problem. But on the other hand, I think there is something to say about the non-distractive aspect of writing on a typewriter. And I'm kind of agnostic as to whether it's manual or electric. In fact, you probably know that I've had a recent infatuation with Type R electrics because I had a Smith Corona Coronet Automatic 12.
Right. Good stuff.
A 6 series electric with the powerful powered carriage return that you don't want to leave a cup of coffee next to the carriage.
Right.
Hit that button. Is it'll go flying across the room? Anyway, that was sitting out in my garage underneath the workbench. I didn't have room for it in my main collection in the house, and I wasn't using it very often. But when I went to take it out and clean it up, I gave it to my brother, because my middle brother has never been a writer, but he started making noises recently about wanting to. He has a lot of tragedy and things in his life, and he wants to write about it, right? So I set down this Ty Bar Electric, this Cornet Automatic 12, that we named Jitters, my wife and I, because
that's great.
It's sort of coffee-colored. It's that brownish coffee color, which, you know, jitters, right, from caffeine, but then right. Also the violent carriage return, right? So we set down the Tide Bar machine, and then I also set down one of these Olympia-branded Nakajima Daisy Wheels, Daisy Wheel typewriters. And I thought he would pick the Daisy Wheel typewriter, to be honest with you, right, because the keys are a little easier to hit and all that, but he liked the Tide Bar electric machine. And that's good. So now that machine is over at his house, and he's a fledgling writer, and he's writing every day on it, right? So
wow.
Anyways, so I have this recent newcomer to my collection is Olympia Reporter, and it's a Tide Bar Electric. I did a video about that recently, and I like the Tide Bar Electrics. They are as fast as a Selectric, I would say. I mean, I can type as fast as I can move my fingers, you know, because the key travel, you push the key down about a quarter of an inch at most before the spindle grabs the type bar and types it.
Right.
So it has very responsive action, and it's a powered carriage return also. So just a tap of your little pinky finger, and that carriage goes flying back. So yeah, they're very fast machines, but they have they have that advantage, the speed of electronic. Actually, they're faster, really. They're more responsive than a Daisy Wheel typewriter. My friend Kevin has a Selectric, and he has an IBM Wheel Writer. And he loves the Wheel Writer because you can have an entire page of typewrite in memory, right? But it's not as responsive as a Tide Bar Electric. There is a delay right between hitting the key and then the letter shows up on paper.
Right.
So the Tide Bar Electrics are really fast. They're still mechanical. Other than an electric motor and a belt and a power cord and a switch, they're essentially a manual typewriter. So,
well, I'm really excited to see how younger generations of writers, what machines they pick. I hope in the future there are, instead of being thousands of people who have 100 typewriters, 50 typewriters. I look forward to there being millions of people, and everyone has a few typewriters, whatever inspires them, you know.
Yes, You know, we've had several typewriter gatherings, type-ins here in Albuquerque in the last few years. None this year, unfortunately.
Sure.
You know, we always like, as collectors and users, we always like our manual typewriters, right? I mean,
right.
That's what we love. But I noticed the average person walking in off the street, you know, we'll have a few electric machines set up as well as a bunch of manuals. And we try to push people to the manual machines and explain to them with our enthusiasm how much we love them. But a lot of times I see these kids, they sit down at the electric machines and they just love them.
Wow.
Because, you know, they don't have the finger strength or the hand strength, right, for a manual a lot of times. And they know how to keyboard, they want to type fast, but they don't have the strength to do that on a manual. So I think there's a market for electric typewriters still. Yeah, so no, I would like to see, I'm kind of agnostic. I mean, I love my manual typewriters, but I'd love to see more people discover typewriters, period, whether it's electric, electronic, or manual.
Yeah,
well said. They're great devices for non-distracted creativity.
Yeah, well said. I'm really excited for that future. And the more we can do it, and as you do it by video, and as David does it via this podcast, we're very excited to have all the information we could ever want or need as writers. So,
yeah. Well, you know, as a photography fan, I think about what can you do to, how do you communicate an idea with a still image, right? A visual image.
Sure.
And then I think about all of the metaphorical and literary images that you can create with words, you know, and I can paint a picture of some science fiction landscape that I read about in a novel, I can paint that picture better than I can photograph it.
Right.
Because I can imagine things that don't even exist. And that's kind of the power of words.
Although you do
images, right?
Yeah, and you do have a few books out. You have some photo books as well as writing books that you've published.
Yeah, I do actually. I have just it's a vanity press, right? Like Blurb and these other outfits. I have a couple books of street photography. One's called Duke City Street. It's basically a document of me roaming around Albuquerque with a camera between 2008, 2009 time period. I have a kind of a follow-up book called Implied Presence, and this is street photography without any people in it. It's the implied presence of humans, and this came about because I was going through all my library of photos and started discovering these repetitive patterns of real interesting photos that have the evidence of people, but they're not there in person.
That's great.
And then I have this other book called TV Shop, and that's just a little photo essay of a television repair shop that I used to work at. And it's, you know, the shelves piled up with old circuit boards and the crusty old soldering iron and all that.
Right.
You know, just nice photographic stuff. And then more to the point here is a number of these short stories that I was writing when I would go down to my favorite coffee shop, which I mentioned earlier was Winning Coffee. I started writing this world centered around a coffee shop called Loser's Blend. And of course, Loser's Blend is kind of a play on Winning Coffee, right? But it was this kind of a middle-aged guy that was recovering from some earlier troubles in his life, and it sort of involves typewriters and cameras, film photography, and these guys are kind of meeting at the coffee shop and there's things happening to them. So I ended up writing a whole series of these stories, one after the other, not really thinking that it was going to be a collection, but I finally made a collection of them, and I have a little book called Loser's Blend that's also available on Blurb. So
that's great.
Go to Blurb and search for Joe Van Cleve and you'll see my books that I've created there. Anybody can buy them.
So. Right, right. And we can find your YouTube channels also as Joe Van Cleve.
Yeah, just go to YouTube and look for Joe Van Cleve, or even easier, just write typewriter video.
Right.
And you'll probably come up with one of my videos.
I was like you. I found a typewriter when I was 5, and it's been with me all these years. Did you ever think that as a little kid at that age, that all these years later, that typewriters would be such a prominent thing in your life?
Oh, no. There's no way I would have thought that then. And even even as late as maybe the mid-90s, it was about that point that I kind of put the Daisy Wheel Smith Corona in the shed and quit using it. And I think that was about the time when I got my first computer and started, you know, using a word processor, right? But I, even then, in the mid-90s, I wouldn't have thought that I would have been into typewriters. But the bug did hit me in the early 2000s for some reason. You're trying to recreate your origin story. Sometimes you have to look hard for those footsteps in the past. But something triggered my mind somewhere in the early 2000s about getting a typewriter. And maybe it was something to do with being tired of computers and all the negative. You know, you think about the way computers were in the early 2000s or late 90s, right? They were kind of a hassle. Still are, actually. But
yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it was that. Maybe it was just the I wanted a tool that was easier, that was, you know, more focused and more dedicated toward that one use.
And that's, you know, so funny.
Is a jack of all trades and a master of none, right?
Right.
Right. And I remember in the 80s making fun of my dad anytime he pulled out, I think he had a Smith Corona Galaxy, and we would just laugh and go, "Why? What are you doing with that thing? There's a computer right next to you." And he'd go, "Well, I got something I got to write out for work, you know what?" And then he always, my dad was in computer sales, so we always had three or four computers, and you know, my favorite were the ones you could write on the screen with, draw on the screen with. That was always really exciting. But
and there he was with his old Galaxy.
Right, right. He's with the old Galaxy in the corner.
Is your dad still with us?
No, unfortunately not. The man kind of violently passed away in my arms maybe 4 years ago now. And one of the last things he told me was, he said, why don't you grow your hair long? Because you have such nice hair and a full head of hair. And he had a full head of hair, too. We don't bald in my family. And then he also said, why don't you try using typewriters to write? And I thought it was all ridiculous. And here I am with long hair typing on typewriters. Go figure.
See, that's the legacy of your dad right there.
That's right. You're absolutely right. There's a huge, huge connection. He died at only 66. He was very asthmatic and diabetic and loved to hit the donut shop. But we had a lot of fun hopping around on our motorcycles. He was an old Harley chopper guy. And so we really got a chance to enjoy life. And I never thought I'd be enjoying the typewriter as much as I do. I just looked at him and I'm like, I got a phone. I've got a laptop. Why on earth would I ever need something stupid like a big typewriter? Oh, I was so wrong.
I wanted to say before we close that I really appreciate these kind of stories that of how typewriters fit into a person's life, you know,
Amen.
Their bigger life. And, you know, it reminds me that, you know, there's different kinds of typewriter collectors. This is something that I've become more conscious of recently. But I'm not the classic typewriter collector. I'm not a collector of typewriters. Like, there's people that like to have the early machines, and it's mainly as a display thing. And the reason why that doesn't appeal to me as much is because my dad and stepmom had 13 antique china cabinets in our house.
Nice.
Full of Avon bottles, Carnival glass, Jim Beam bottles. They were collectors of all this clutter and ephemera. And I kind of grew up in what looked like a museum.
Sure.
And so my interest in it is usability. I want typewriters that work, that I can create with. I don't want just machines that are pretty to look at. Although that's nice too.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I kind of tend to go with post-World War II machines. Although my oldest machine right now is a 1930 Underwood Portable. And I got to say, it's one of the best feeling typewriters, just the feel of it. It's just wonderful.
That's great. No, I completely agree with you, Joe. And that's hard, too. I know I saw a nice Oliver for sale right down the street for only $40. And I thought, well, that's great, but I'm never going to use the darn thing to type on, you know, so.
Right, right. There's different kinds of collectors, and that's fine. We have a big enough world of typewriter fanatics, and we can, some of us can be just collectors, and some can be just users, and a lot of us can be both.
Yeah.
Joe, I want to invite you to come back on. You've got so much information and knowledge, and I would love to have you come back on another podcast down the road. Would you be open to that?
Oh, I would love to do that. I know I talk too much sometimes, rabbit holes of subjects, but I would love to come back and talk typewriters again with you. And maybe someday I'll drop by Austin again. Been there a few times.
Well, that would be a pleasure, and we would love to take you out to have some good old Texas food, maybe some Tex-Mex.
There you go. I think the last time I was in Texas, we actually made about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and we made a vacation, driving vacation to San Antonio, and we stayed in a tiny house that was in the backyard of an old Victorian house, and I brought my Remington QuietWriter, of all things, so that was fun. When you're driving, you can carry a big typewriter, you know?
That's right.
That's funny. Yeah, no, I did something similar. Although when I was in Austin, David didn't feed me. I was just walking through a dark parking lot. He hit me over the head with an Erica, and I woke up, and I was on Austin Typewriter, Inc. So
that's what happens. That's how it happens.
You're getting a good invite.
That's a true story.
You guys are so great. Thank you so much for all you do.
I'd love to come on again and spend more time with you. It's really enjoyable talking with you.
All right, great. Bob, wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up. I'm Bob Marshall, here with Joe Van Cleve and one David Gibbiet Torres, Austin Typewriter, Inc.
All right, we're back from that podcast. Thanks to Joe and also to Bob for getting that together. That's some really good information to know about one of our members who, again, I'm going to call him the YouTube encyclopedia of typewriters.
Absolutely. There are around 250 videos. You should, if you're interested in seeing him live, just Google Joe Van Cleve and you will find him on YouTube.
Yeah, and I would almost, you really don't even have to go back to the very first one that he did. But I think I'm always going on to Netflix or something and I want to watch a series. I want to go back to the original one, to the pilot. So I think I'm going to go back and find his very first one and then just start going through, you know, that could take me a year. But
right.
I'm going to go through and watch all of these because, I mean, we always talk about typewriters. what a great way to get an education, especially during this pandemic period. If I'm going to do anything, I want to learn about typewriters and be able to visually see it as well.
Absolutely. The more knowledge, the better, for sure.
Well, again, thank you for listening to our podcast today. There are definitely going to be more coming, so stay tuned. I'm here with Everito right here. Any last words?
Don't use WD-40.
Don't use WD-40. And we're going to be having some great things coming up in the year 2021, so tune in. I'm Gimiet. I'm here with Everito. You're listening to Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. Thank you for listening to the Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. For more information about our group, please find us online at austintypewriterinc.com, or you can also visit us on Facebook and Instagram. Join us next time for another episode of Austin Typewriter Inc. May your type slugs always be clean.